The practice was quiet that particular day, and I had finished my round by mid-morning. I didn't go into the house because through the waiting-room window I could see rows of farmers sitting round the walls. They all wore the same offended, self-righteous expression. I stole away to the marketplace. When I had time, I enjoyed moving among the stalls which crowded the ancient square. You could buy fruit, fish, second-hand books, cheeses, clothes, in fact, nearly everything. But the China stall was my favourite. It was run by a Jewish gentleman from Leeds, fat, confident, sweating, and with a hypnotic selling technique. I never got tired of watching him. He fascinated me. He was in his best form today, standing in a little clearing surrounded on all sides by heaps of crockery, while beyond, the farmers' wives listened open-mouthed to his oratory. "I'm not good-looking," he was saying. "I'm not clever. But by God, I can talk. I can talk the hind leg off a donkey. Now look here." He lifted a cheap cup and held it aloft, but tenderly, gripping it between his thick thumb and forefinger, his little finger daintily outspread. "Beautiful, isn't it? Now isn't that lovely?" Then he placed it reverently on the palm of his hand and displayed it to the audience. "Now I tell you this, ladies, you can buy this self-same tea set in Connors in Bradford for £3.15. I'm not joking nor jesting, it's there and that's the price. But my price, ladies..." And here he fished out an old walking stick with a splintered handle. "My price for this beautiful tea set..." He held the stick by its end and brought it crashing down on an empty tea chest. "Never mind £3.15. Crash! Never mind £3. Crash! Never mind £2. Crash! Never mind 30 bob. Crash! Here, come on! Who give me a quid?" Not a soul moved. All right. I can see I've met me match today. Go on, 17 and a tanner the lot." A final, devastating crash, and the ladies began to make signals and fumble in their handbags. A little man emerged from the back of the stall and started to hand out the tea sets. The ritual had been observed, and everybody was happy. I was waiting, deeply content, for the next item from the virtuoso, when I saw a burly figure in a check cap waving wildly at me from the edge of the crowd. He had his hand inside his jacket, and I knew what he was feeling for. I didn't hesitate, but dodged quickly behind a stall laden with pig troughs and wire netting. I had gone only a few steps before another farmer hailed me purposefully. He was brandishing an envelope. I felt trapped. Then I saw a way of escape. Rapidly skirting a counter displaying cheap jewellery, I plunged into the doorway of the Drover's Arms and, avoiding the bar which was full of farmers, slipped into the manager's office. I was safe. This was one place where I was always welcome. The manager looked up from his desk, but he did not smile. "Look here," he said sharply. "I brought my dog in to see you some time ago, and in due course I received an account from you." I cringed inwardly. "I paid by return and was extremely surprised this morning to find that another account had been rendered. I have here a receipt signed by..." I couldn't stand any more. "Look, I'm very sorry, Mr. Brook, but there's been a mistake. I'll put it right. Please accept our apologies." This became a familiar refrain over the next few days, but it was Siegfried who had the most unfortunate experience. It was in the bar of his favourite pub, the Black Swan. He was approached by Billy Breckenridge, a friendly, jocular little character, one of Darby's worthies.
"Hey, remember that 3 and 6 I paid you at your surgery? I've had another bill for it."
Siegfried made a polished apology. He'd had a lot of practice, and bought the man a drink. They parted on good terms. The pity of it was that Siegfried, who seldom remembered anything, didn't remember this. A month later, also in the Swan, he ran into Billy Breckenridge again. This time, Billy wasn't so jocular.
"Hey, remember that bill you sent me twice? Well, I've had it again."
Siegfried did his best, but his charm bounced off the little man. He was offended.
"Right, I can see you don't believe I paid your bill. I had a receipt from your brother, but I've lost it."
He brushed aside Siegfried's protestations.
No, there's only one way to settle this. I say I paid the 3 and 6, you say I haven't. All right, I'll toss you for it."
Miserably, Siegfried demurred, but Billy was adamant. He produced the penny and with great dignity balanced it on his thumbnail.
"Okay, you call."
"Heads," muttered Siegfried, and heads it was. The little man did not change expression. Still dignified, he handed the 3 and 6 to Siegfried.
Perhaps we might be able to consider the matter closed."
He walked out of the bar. Now there are all kinds of bad memories, but Siegfried's was of the inspired type. He somehow forgot to make a note of this last transaction, and at the end of the month, Billy Breckenridge received a fourth request for the amount which he had already paid twice. It was about then that Siegfried changed his pub and started going to the Cross Keys.